Stay up to date on the green and gold all season. The Green and Gold Fix podcast is brought to you by Pottawatomie Casino Hotel. Luxury stay, elite play, unwind in sophisticated comfort. Win big, dine, and experience the events in Milwaukee.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of, but back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in.
Do you know what that music means? Every Wednesday he joins us.
And unlike Demowski, he doesn't bail on us after the football season ends. It is our friend, our famous friend, Brian Bulaga.
Hi, Brian. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
So I was looking because we're experiencing some technical issues with getting the Twitter and Facebook video streams going. So we're on YouTube exclusively until Tausch gets us signed up for Twitch. But so I was looking for a photo, and I didn't want to reuse the GIF of you repeatedly saying Brian Bulaga, Iowa. So I went into my archives, and I came across the photo that you sent me because I was doing a story on Campy and what a unique coach he was. And it's the picture you took in the offensive line meeting room of your bobblehead, which I believe is on the back table along with some of your trophies. Not the one that you won for the Tom Mulhern Award, which I certainly expect to be in a much more prominent location in your home. But he did this for all the guys. And I'm looking at yours, and I'm curious how yours compared in terms of looking like the real person. Because other than the hair being a skosh darker, I think it's right on the money. I think it's pretty damn good. How did yours compare with your other offensive linemen that Campy violated the salary cap to have you guys all have your own bobbleheads?
He did a pretty good job on all of them. Like, I mean, it resembled everyone pretty close. I mean, he had the hair down, like, you know, Sitton and TJ, and Dave. He had everyone's hair pretty close. Like, it was a pretty good job. Like he must have, you know, had all the copies sent to him and photos sent and said yes and no on that, or that looks good, or that does. Like, it must have been a couple, you know, renditions sent back to him until he got them approved, because they were all pretty well done. So it was very thoughtful, obviously. Like, we really appreciated them, and then we got to take them home. But it was pretty. Because, you know, linemen don't really get the bobbleheads in the pro shop. So that's why he initially started it, right? Because that was a big thing. I think that was the year where they did a bunch of bobbleheads for a lot of guys, right? And they did a lot of the bobbleheads for, like, giveaways during the game day, and then had them in the pro shop. And no lineman ever got any. So for Christmas, he decided to get us all one and make them for us. And they turned out really, really well. So it was a
question for both of you. Take Jordan Love out of the equation. Who is the most popular bobblehead being sold at the pro shop right now?
Josh Jacobs.
Yeah. I would say Jacobs, or probably, I mean, obvious. I mean, McKinney, if I had to take a guess. Because I think, I mean, Jacobs is, you know, very recognizable. But, like, I think McKinney, because I think, you know, like the flowing locks of Josh Sitton and David Bakhtiari, I think McKinney, I think he's got longer dreads, and I think that stands out. I think if you do the dreads properly, I think that stands out on a bobblehead. I think that'd be a great seller. So it's all about those unique details on the bobblehead and how it stands out, right? Like, I mean, my bobblehead, obviously, I just have a buzz haircut. Doesn't really stand out, but looks Dave's good. And Josh's had long hair, so that stood out on theirs, like, you know, the locks. So it was something that was unique, and that would be probably the same for McKinney as well. So, like, that to me,
I think Tucker's in the mix. I bet Tucker's top three.
So if you want to know, I'm on the Packers Pro Shops website currently. They have 15 bobbleheads that are currently available, including one that is like a garden gnome in a Packers uniform. So we're not going to count him because he's not a player.
Who does he most look like?
I'm not going anywhere near that. Here are your options for bobbleheads from the Pro Shop. For $64.99, you can get a Jair Alexander bobblehead.
That'll be discounted
soon. I'd
hold
off like a month, and I got a hunch that'll be on clearance. Just a hunch.
Ray Nitschke, $49.99. He's a Hall of Famer. And he's blessed.
So I was going to say, like, a Reggie White would be the one I would think would be the top seller right now. Like, one of the Hall of Fame guys.
The other one's available. I won't go through the prices on all of them, but I'm not paying $64.99 for a Luke Musgrave bobblehead, which is also available.
What?
Wow.
Also available, Christian Watson, a second Jair Alexander one. This one's only $20. It's a tinier one. Bart Starr.
$40.
Rashawn Gary. Reggie White. Jesse, well done. Romeo Doubs. But if you order it by mail, it may or may not show up. Christian Watson. It's all in good fun.
Is the Christian Watson one broken?
Is it all in good fun?
Just stop it, Jesse. Like, just stop it.
I just want to point out that Jesse made it even easier on me with his line.
Jason started it.
First of all,
Jesse, you're going into knee territory, all right? And now you got two guys on here that have torn knees.
ACL,
so now you're starting to cross a boundary that's a, I'm a little
sad. There you are.
I'm not counting the one now. All the other injuries, though, before this.
Now I'm a little, you know, let's
I'm irritated with Jesse.
ACL, he didn't do anything to tear his ACL. He didn't do anything to hurt his knee, right? He was playing football. He wasn't building a snowman outside and slipped on the ground and fell in the winter. He was playing football. So let's take it easy a little bit, all right? Let's relax.
He might have done that snowman one a year or two before this, though.
No. I'm not going there. I'm not going there. I'm not doing it. You're not getting me to go there.
Playing football because Romeo Doubs was sick and didn't play in that game, and he wasn't supposed to play. Your final three available bobbleheads at the Packers Pro Shop: Kenny Clark, Eric Stokes, and on clearance right now and still available for the low, low bargain price of $18.97, the only offensive lineman available, David Bakhtiari.
Wow. Dave still has some inventory left. Nice.
I just put it in my cart, actually.
Nice. He's still got some inventory left. Good for him.
So there are your bobbleheads. Brian, before we shift gears, because we brought up Campy, and I know we talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago, but there have been some changes on this staff. There's going to be a new linebackers coach after Anthony Campanile departed. There's a new quarterbacks coach in Sean Mannion after Tom Clements' departure. And there's a new defensive line coach after they fired Jason Rebrovich. Both of you played for Campy. Both of you swear by him. How much of a difference does having a line coach or position coach generally make in your performance as a player? Because these are some critical positions that we're talking about here. We're talking about a quarterback in the critical third year of his starting career. We're talking about a defensive line group that underachieved. And we're talking about a linebacker group that has two guys that seem to be ascending. Quay Walker, who was playing much better when he got hurt, and Edgerrin Cooper, who was playing at a very high level. How critical is that position, coach, to your level of play?
You want to take it first, Tosh, or you want me to go?
No, go for it, Blue. Go ahead.
Okay. I think position coaches are very important. I think people sometimes undervalue their importance, and because I think sometimes people overlook them, thinking just, you know, oh, you know, guys, you know, they're professionals, you know, yeah, they go into these meetings, you know, they get the game plan and they move on and they practice and they go out there and do it, which that is kind of the structure of it, but there's a lot more that goes into it than just, sitting down in the chair in the meeting room, having your O-line or D-line or linebacker coach go through the plays, and you move on. Like, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot that these coaches put into it, and there's a lot of individual details that they put into each guy throughout the week to get each guy prepared. And each guy is different. Each guy needs something different throughout the week. Each guy mentally needs something different throughout the week that's going to help them on game day. And these coaches figure that out early on. And then they're able to help them as the season goes on. And that's why you see normally see players, like especially young players, like we saw in the linebacker room with Cooper, get better as the season goes on, because those coaches have figured out what helps those guys, right? And what kind of gets them in the right mind frame, and what helps them see things better, and it helps them advance and play better football as the season goes on. And obviously we see how good of a coach he was, because he goes and gets a DC job, right? So, like, you lose valuable coaches that have big impacts on young players. And, you know, Tom Clements, I mean, I was around him for a long time. Tausch was around him. Really good coach. You know, coached a lot of really good quarterbacks, obviously. Very smart, very calm presence, I think, around quarterbacks. So that'll be interesting to see how that kind of plays itself out, because I think Tom is – you know, I think his resume kind of speaks for itself, but I just think position coaches in general, they do more than just, you know, tell you what the game plan is throughout the entire week. And I think it gets kind of overlooked. And I think a lot of people just see it as the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator. And in our case, for the Packers, it's the head coach, because LaFleur calls the plays. But the position coaches, you know, they're bringing the message from the room to the coordinator, right? So especially for the offensive line, and Tausch knows this as well, Campy brought the message from the O-line room directly to McCarthy or to Aaron or to whoever it was. If there was something that we particularly didn't like or we weren't comfortable with or we thought needed a little tweaking, Campy would bring it directly to them, and they would look it over, or they would discuss it, and they would see if they could tweak it or make adjustments to it, if it made sense or not, right? Like, so he was our voice in that room, and with Mike. And obviously we could talk to Aaron about anything, but, you know, Mike and Aaron sat in that quarterback's room with Tom and all those guys every day. So, like, that's where he brought that stuff that, hey, the O-line kind of wants this, and they would go over it. So there's more to it than just X's and O's. There's a lot more than, hey, here's your run scheme this week, go over it. Like, there's a lot more individualized mental and physical breakdowns that go throughout it throughout the week that position coaches play a role in.
No doubt. And I think the relationship, respect, and the trust that Brian's talking about are probably just as important, if not more, than the actual scheme and the techniques that you're teaching. It's, you have a trust that your coach has your back, you have their back, and you're going to work together, and you know who these guys are. And when you have a new guy come in, you can watch the tape, you can do it, but maybe they don't know that Blue has a certain way he likes to approach his business and how that coach can help you do that. That's all part of that process of getting to know. And the great coaches all have that sense of what they need. And for O-linemen, most of the time, it is a kick in the butt. There's building guys' confidence, but there's also making sure you're doing your job and you're getting after it to the degree you need to. And balancing that out, regardless of what position you're coaching, I think that's always been the key thing.
All right, Brian, we got a few other things we want to get to with you, including I know Jesse's been working on getting a clip from Brian Gutekunst, or Bulagakunst, since we're going to put you back in the GM's chair. Because as Tausch and I kind of worked through things earlier in the week, we were going through a Domofsky story in which he talked about, you know, how straightforward or not so difficult the offseason decisions are. And as we dug further into the offensive line, I think much like the Transformers, there's more than meets the eye there. And we want to get into that with you. We will do that coming up with Brian Bulaga as we roll on Wilde and Tausch.
On the air, on demand, on social, on Wisconsin sports. Serving Wisconsin sports fans. This is 100.5 ESPN.
I've got some famous friends you probably never heard of. But back in Rutherford County, our crowd is second to none. You might not know them here in this big city we're in. But when I go back home, I've got some famous friends. Yeah, I do.
Continuing with Brian Bulaga. All right, Brian. We saw what happened when Elgton Jenkins went out of the game against Philadelphia. Telly Monster, Kadeem Telfert, who I think had played 13 snaps during the season to that point, and Travis Glover, who went in first, had played like 8 or 6 snaps to that point. Not great, Bob or Brian. obviously, Jordan Morgan undergoing shoulder surgery and being done for the year takes out a guy who is a borderline starter, sixth man, first round draft pick. But there has been, and I am part of this group, even though I like him and he's been great for me in terms of having a working relationship with him in the locker room, but most of us think Josh Myers has played his last down for the Packers. They've got Jacob Monk as an option as a center. But, oh, by the way, he was still an option. You could have put him in at guard instead of two guys that are actually tackles when Elgton got the stinger, and they didn't do that, and he was active. So he basically redshirted all last year. When you look at this offensive line, Zach Tom, final year of his contract. Rashid Walker, final year of his contract. Elgton Jenkins, approaching age 30, which is not a popular age if you are Brian Gutekunst. And then Sean Ryan and Jordan Morgan. That would appear to be your starting theoretical five. But that doesn't give you a whole lot of depth right there. How do you view the current state of the Packers' offensive line as they head into the offseason?
Yeah, I think you hit it. I mean, there's not a bunch of depth, and that's kind of the concerning part for me. And do I feel good about the five guys? I think Elgton kicks into center. I think that's kind of where this leads to, right? I think Elgton playing center is the natural progression of this, because I think Elton's still a high-end performer, and I get the age of 30 is not a popular age for the Green Bay Packers, and it hasn't been for linemen for a long time. But if you want to keep him and he's still playing well, moving him to center and extending him or doing whatever you want to do is probably the route to go. And then, you know, all the other positions, you do what you want to do. But regardless of all that, there needs to be addition elsewhere with depth. And I get you have Monk, but like you said, he redshirted. They didn't really give him any snaps to, you know, get his feet wet, essentially. Like, you don't really know what the deal was. Like, you know, and that, so you don't know how he is in live action or against a team like the Eagles or like the Vikings or the Lions or these high-end teams. So you don't really know what he's about yet. And then after that, like, who are the swing tackles? Who is the, you know, the backup tackle if something happens to Sheed or to Zach Tom? Like, what happens there? Like, we saw what happens if a guard gets hurt. So what happens if a tackle gets hurt? Like, that's the thing that concerns me. So, like, I think Goody's obviously going to address it. Now, that's not saying guys can't improve in the offseason. They certainly can. But it needs to be very dramatic, like a very dramatic improvement from the Philly game till kickoff week one. I'm not sure that's possible, right? Like, I'm not sure guys can improve that much in this amount of time to be game ready in that amount of time, right? Like, so I think that there's going to be probably some addition in that room, and whether that's veteran-ish free agents, because I know Goody doesn't want to go older guys, but veteran-ish free agents, or going back to the draft, and I get it, those are young guys too, and they're not experienced, and you don't know anything about them, but you have to bolster this thing some way with depth, because right now there's just not a lot there, and that's a concerning part, simply because we saw what happened against Philly in the last game of the year.
So, Blue, I think we have broken down O-line play as well as anybody. But have we been too, I guess, optimistic? Because I thought, for the most part, you saw Josh Jacobs' numbers. Jordan Love didn't get sacked a lot. Running game was as strong as we've ever seen it. But Jason brought this up at Matt LaFleur's end of the season presser. And it made me pause after I heard LaFleur's comments. And Jason, you were there. You made it sound as if LaFleur maybe isn't as pleased with how his group played, maybe as we all thought that they played. And I don't know if you want to kind of get into that, but where we, I guess, Blue, the question is for me, did we overestimate, because there's so much other O-line play that is god-awful in the NFL? Green Bay is not a bad O-line. Go ahead, Jason.
Well, just to your point, so Rob Domofsky was working on what he intended to be a very positive story about the offensive line and the job it did, understanding, obviously, that losing a multi-time Pro Bowler messed things up pretty good in the playoff game. And LaFleur's response was basically that they need to be better, that they were not good enough. And that doesn't happen from a writer's perspective. You know, I don't want to speak for Rob, but I think I can in this instance. He knows his stuff. I think I know my stuff. I think usually we have a pretty good feel for who's playing well, who's not, how the coaches are thinking. And it was just jarring to hear him, because, again, we don't see the film through the same lens that you two do, because you played in the league 20-plus years combined, and Rob and I played zero combined. So I thought that their offensive line was good to very good, but not great or elite. And listening to the way Matt LaFleur responded, sounded like they were, dare I say, mid, like the kids like to say.
So there's a couple ways to look at it, and I think where he probably was disappointed, as I think I was, and probably Tosh, the way we looked at it when we watched some of these games, I think in the bigger moments against the bigger teams, you know, so you're looking at the Minnesotas, you're looking at the Detroits, they didn't play as well as they could have. And those are the moments of the season and the times where you need your guys up front to play their best. And they didn't, for the most part, right? Like, if you look at those games, you know, the game in Minnesota, they struggled. I mean, they really struggled at the game in Minnesota, and had a hard time early on in that game pass protecting. Like, Jordan Love was under duress most of that first half. And some of the third, and then they kind of settled down into the fourth. But into the fourth, you know, you start to settle down into the fourth. I mean, that game, you know, it's little too late at that point. So I think, coming from LaFleur, I think that's his probably perspective of it. Like, yeah, I mean, they played well for, I think, personally, for a lot of the year. I mean, they ran the ball really well. His sack numbers were down. I bet his hit numbers were down as well, like how many times he was hit. I think they did a lot of good things, but you look at the certain moments of the season in the biggest games of the season, and how does the group perform? And that's what sticks out to coaches, right? In those must-win games, in those high-pressure moments, how does the group perform? And I think that's what a lot of people remember too, right? Like, a lot of people remember those moments. And, like, I mean, we talked about it directly after the Philly game. Like, what are people going to remember about the offensive line? Unfortunately for Zach Tom, too, which he has to work through the entire offseason, what are people going to remember about Zach Tom through the entire offseason? Well, that he had kind of not his best game of the year in the last game of the year, right? Even though he put together a great body of work all year for the most part, well, he didn't play his best game against Philly, but that's what people remember. And that's like, that's part of the thing that people remember is the big moments. And that's kind of where I think LaFleur's coming at with it, or at least I think so. Because I think if you look at them overall, I don't think they played poorly. I think they played pretty good based on everything that I watched. Is there always room for improvement? Absolutely. Absolutely. The offensive linemen are never perfect, and there's always room for improvement.
Don't I know
it. Even on the best lines that I played on, there was always things we could have done better. There was always, like, I always felt in those games with the best lines I played, there was always, like, 8 to 10 plays a game that I wish we had back that we could have, like, done way better on, that would have done, you know, we could have gotten another 15 yards in a run play, or if we would have held up for another 1 second, a receiver would have came open and Aaron would have completed. So, like, there's always plays you want back. But for the most part, man, I think they did well. So,
well, and but Blue, coach is I always think, looking. Yeah, I think the part, and to Jason's point on it being jarring, typically, you know, these guys, the reporters aren't asking a ton of O-line questions unless things stink. Oh, you're going to replace this guy, and Jason's trying to get centers fired and guards. But the fact that you're throwing softballs up for the coaches to basically throw some attaboys, and the coach saying, no, 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 I'm not doing that, with a group that we thought played pretty well, that was the surprise. And maybe it is Pommen, because they were disappointed they didn't play well against Philly and it was a disaster. When Elton got hurt, maybe that's what it was, and you're not looking at the whole season cumulatively. But it's still, I think, and that was the part I had to reevaluate. Like, maybe I'm missing something, because I do think there's a lot of really good players on that group, and you know how it shakes out and what that's going to look like starting in the spring is going to be intriguing. If who they move at center, if Josh leaves, what they do at tackle, is Jordan Morgan, who has declared he wants to be the left tackle, is he going to push and say, I'm not playing guard, I want to play tackle? I see he throws a snapshot or one of those tweets. He's in the old facility grinding last night at 8 o'clock. You know, is that because he's like, I want to take this left tackle job, I want this opportunity? I don't know, but I got a hunch his mind hasn't changed that he wants to be a tackle. I would believe that he still believes that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, listen, and as much as I like the way Rashid played towards the end of the year, I think he kind of found his groove, and I thought he improved as the season went on. I think everyone can say, and he would even probably say, it started out rough, a lot of penalties, and just rough play early on. Didn't really find his rhythm and his set, and he just looked off early on in the season, but he found his rhythm towards the end. Jordan Morgan, I mean, we haven't seen him play left tackle. So, like, let's just start with that, right? Like, so, like, I have no idea how he looks playing left tackle.
Neither do they.
NFL setting. Yeah, so, like, I can't even tell you if, like, maybe he's great. Maybe he's – I have no idea. So, like, for me to even make a judgment, I have no idea. But for him to still want to push for that position, why not? Why not still want to compete for it, right? Like, I get
absolutely.
It. Rashid got – he got named the starter pretty early, and they said, hey, you're going to focus on these positions. That's great, but that doesn't mean this offseason you can't go back and try to compete for that again, or at least make your intentions known that you would like another opportunity. They don't have to grant you that opportunity. They don't have to give you anything. But if you make it known, maybe they do, maybe they don't. But
just found it interesting that on February 18th, he's posting pictures. And what's that place called? The Crick?
The Crick.
He's just posting random pictures of working in Green Bay on the 18th of Feb. I find that very interesting.
Brian, I know I ask a lot of you, especially for someone who makes wisecracks about Seattle and Bruce Irvin from time to time. I'm not a very good friend. But I do ask a lot of you. You're doing a charity event with Corey Linsley and me on Monday via Zoom. Can I ask you to stick around for a little while longer? Because we have a clip from Brian Gutekunst, not Bulagakunst.
I worked really hard to find it.
Talking... Jesse, I was going to give you credit. You
he's
didn't have to announce
Brian
that.
Trying to guilt Brian into staying is what he's trying to
do. Tom says 1 minute before the show, hey, let's have this. Got to do it in the middle of everything
First
else.
First off,
doing.
It was 5 minutes, and
okay.
I didn't use that
okay.
tone.
Okay, 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 okay.
Well,
stop.
I didn't.
I want you to hear what Goody said about Zach Tom, because I'm always concerned that I don't like to be the guy who thinks he knows and makes assumptions, and then it's like, oh, wait, I never thought of that, and that's what they're actually doing. And I kept assuming that they're moving Elton to center when Josh Myers is playing elsewhere. But something Goody said at his postseason wrap-up press conference makes me wonder if maybe there is something more to the story here.
You're not saying, but you're saying?
No, I'm just saying Brian Bulaga wants to hear it, so Brian Bulaga can decide if Brian Gutekunst isn't saying, he's just saying. So, can we keep you a couple more minutes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't it have been great after all that?
What a guy. Teammate of the year. Yes.
Wouldn't it have been great if after all that he said, no, I got to go?
That would have been funny. No, I got some oranges to peel.
More with Brian Bulaga to start the 10 o'clock hour, which will begin in 2 minutes. So stick around. It's Wilde and Tausch and Bulaga.
Don't go anywhere. Another hour of Wilde and Tausch, presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin, is coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin, the ESPN app, and Wisconsin On Demand.
Clock hour of Wilde and Tausch, as Brian Bulaga graciously willing to spend a couple more minutes with us. All right, Brian, I don't know if you heard, Jesse worked very hard to unearth this audio, and that hard work included me finding the tweet with the live video feed from Goody's presser, finding the quote for him that Tausch was looking for, and sending him the transcript to make it easier to locate
it. You did all that?
Thank you for your service, Jesse. I wasn't going to bring up any of those things till you said I worked really hard to find this audio.
As has been established, I work really well when I have a series of clues to follow. I'm great with directions. Cooking, give me a recipe, I can do it great. Make me do
Musty
it on
Mac.
My own, can't figure it out.
All right, so here is the clip that Tausch wanted for you to hear so we could get your thoughts on what the general manager might be saying about Zach Tom and his future on the Packers offensive line.
Would you be willing to move Zach Tom if you felt that might be?
Yeah, I mean, again, if it was best for the Green Bay Packers, absolutely. I think he's established himself pretty well as a tackle in this league. You know, certainly I think he could play both left and right tackle. You know, I think when we drafted him, we also thought he could be a very, very good center if we needed him to be. Yeah, again, he's one of those guys that could probably play all five spots. But he's established himself pretty well in this league as a tackle.
So, a couple of things here. First of all, that voice you hear is Rob Domofsky, who may or may not be invested in the idea.
He is an agenda-pushing son of a gun, isn't he?
As a center, because he was told by some high-placed Packers officials that he could be a Pro Football Hall of Fame center. But that notwithstanding, I thought it was interesting, Brian. That's not even the part that I thought was the most interesting. He's established himself pretty well as a tackle in this league, and he said it that way twice. He did not say he's established himself as a right tackle in this league. And we know that very good football players can play right tackle, right? Brian Bulaga, Earl Dotson, Zach Tom.
There's been some good ones.
Mark Tauscher. But he didn't say that. So as he also faces the final year of his contract, Brian Gutekunst calls Brian Bulaga. And he says, kind of like Aaron Rodgers is going to call me for advice. He says, Brian, You did such a great job firing up the troops during the 2023 season. That offensive line played so much better after you came to practice. I want to use you. I've got Campy working for me in the scouting department now. I want your advice. What should I do with Zach Tom in his final year of his rookie deal? What are you telling Goody Belagerkunst?
Oh, well, I personally think you should leave Zach Tom where he is. I think you leave him exactly where he is, and I don't think you move him. I think he can play left tackle. That seems to be the, you know, the consensus, what everyone believes. I think he had some snaps out there when Dave, I think a few years ago, right?
Right.
I think, and, you know, he went out there, but his at the time he was playing left tackle, he wasn't there yet to be an NFL starter. So it was hard to get a gauge on how he was as a tackle in the NFL at that point. His strength wasn't there yet. His technique really wasn't refined yet. And then the next year he goes up to right tackle and he looks fantastic. And then, you know, as it continues to go on, he's playing how he is right now. So that doesn't mean he can't go back out there, flip his feet around, work a whole offseason on it, work a training camp on it, and make the adjustment and do really well. But I just look at things, if it's not broke, why fix it? And if you move Zach Tom now to left tackle, that means you're now retraining someone to go play right tackle. Now, is it going to be as easy to retrain someone that's been playing left tackle to play right tackle? I don't know. That's something that you now have to evaluate as a scouting department, as a offensive line coach like Butkus and Steno and LaFleur. Can you think, or do you think now Sheed or Jordan Morgan can go play right tackle? Mm-hmm. And that's something you guys have to go through and really discuss and think, hey, can they make the adjustment in this amount of time? And I don't know that. They would know that way better than I would. But I think Zach Tom, like, and this was always the case, right? Like, you look at certain things, or at least this is the case for them right now. I think when you have a guy like Zach Tom, and I think Sean Ryan's playing, you know, and continue to play good football, you have a right side that you can count on, right? Like, and you know they're good. You can leave them be, right? They can block one-on-one for a lot of the game. And that means you can slide and help now to the left side. And now you're going to have Jordan Morgan over there, potentially, you know, not a rookie, but a second-year guy that hadn't seen a lot of action and Sheed. And you can slide Elton over there to help those guys more than what you might have anticipated, right? Because, you know, you were expecting Jordan Morgan potentially get more reps and all that, but he didn't. So now you can favor one side of the line, even though they always slide left anyways and the right tackles never get help. But now you can really count on Tom and Sean Ryan to do their job out there on their own, and you can send help more out to the left and solidify one side. Now, if you flip it, now you're juggling things and doing stuff different. Now you got a left guard that's brand new playing next to Zach Tom, and now you got a brand new right tackle, and where are you sending your help? So, like, that's kind of where you're putting yourself in limbo, not just as an offensive coordinator, but as a GM, and you're trying to figure out how you balance it. So I think you leave him. And if you're Zach Tom, you see what Tristan Wirfs got paid at left tackle. It was a ton of money, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think Tristan Wirfs got paid, I think he's like, you know, I don't know how much, a ton, right? But probably not too far behind that is Penny from the Lions, right? Making a ton of money at, you know, right tackle for the Lions.
Wirfs is 5 years, $140 million. I'll get you Penny Sewell in a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, but he's not going to get Penny's number, and he shouldn't push for that because, you know, he's gotten the All-Pros and the Pro Bowls and all those types of things, and Zach Tom hasn't got that. And, you know, that's the way these things get measured, unfortunately. But the money is there at right tackle. The market right tackle. Lane Johnson has been getting that money. Like, the money is there for right tackles to make a like to strike. Like they can make a ton of money playing out there. So if he's comfortable there and he's playing well there, not that he can't play left tackle, but why move if you don't have to? And that's kind of the way I see it. Now, they may, and certainly not to center. Definitely not to center. Because if you move him to center, now you're just absolutely blowing up everything. You're literally saying, we're just going to take this offensive line, deconstruct it, and start over again. Because, like, what are you doing now, right? Like, so now you're ripping away your best tackle. You're putting him inside. Now you got Elton. So where are you moving Elton? So you're leaving Elton at left guard. Okay, that's great. So now Jordan Morgan's going to go play right tackle, a position he's never played, and he didn't get to take any snaps at that. He only took snaps at guard during the season. Then he got hurt. So, like, you're just completely – you're just throwing everything out the window. You're starting again. And now you had all this momentum with Sean Ryan and Zach Tom throughout the season. That's gone now, too. Like, we're stuck – that's – don't care about that anymore. So, like – The center talk is just like it's just not even worth it. Like it can't. You can't do it. You just can't do it. Please, like that would be my one thing I would tell Goody. Just please don't do that.
Yeah, Rob Domofsky. All right, Blue. Before we let you go, your old teammate Joey Bosa. It's being reported that the Chargers are going to release him. They got Khalil Mack. They're not going to keep. Which of those guys, if you had a pick, would you want in Green Bay? Or neither?
I think they both are good football players. I don't know.
They're old.
Joey,
they're getting old.
Joey's a unique pass rusher. Joey does a lot of different, unique things. His injuries as of late have been unfortunate for him. I think he's had a lot of I think it's been like hammies and things like that. I'm not exactly sure. Ankles. I don't really know. But I know he hasn't been playing as much as he's wanted to the last probably year and a half, or I don't know his full injury history or breakdown. I haven't paid attention as much. But I remember in the Packer game, he got hurt. And Khalil Mack, if he is, I think he wants to play still. I'm not totally sure. I'm not sure. I mean, I think he's still productive, but I'm not. If I had to pick one,
you don't have to.
I don't have to, but
you don't have to say anything. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I would take. Listen, if I would take both of them, if I really had to. Like, I think they both could be very productive. I still think if in the right situation, which I think this scheme is for them. You know, I think in the scheme that they're in. With this defense, it would be good for them. They could both still put up 8 to 10 sacks on a season, no problem. Are they going to play the run the way you want them to? Maybe Mac a little bit more than Bosa, if you're looking at it from a run game standpoint. But I still think those guys can be very productive, but it's what the number is, right? It's what the number is on both of those guys, which I doubt Bosa's taken like nothing to play. Like Bosa's going to demand a big number, and I don't know if Khalil Mack's taken a super discount either. So like it's just what are the number? What's going to be the number for those guys? And will Green Bay even go there? And that's the question.
I would say probably not.
Well, yeah. Maybe they can get him for like one.
Tell you no.
Maybe they can get him for one of those Zach Bond contracts, and then they'll really be onto something.
Yep.
Brian, thanks for letting us keep you extra. I'll talk to you tomorrow on the Homer Hour, and then obviously Monday for our little CASA event as well with our friend Corey Lindsley. We appreciate you, buddy. Thanks.
All right, guys. Take it easy.